and welcome to the Social Innovators Podcast with me, your host, Naomi Whitbourne. In this podcast, I chat to entrepreneurs and leaders developing innovative solutions to tackle global challenges. In each episode, you'll hear from a different social innovation expert who I hope will help you on your own journey. Today, I'm speaking to Esme Verisi, the founder of Considered Capital. Having spent most of her 20s working in and with startups, Esme has experienced the many challenges facing founders when it comes to funding. So in 2021, Esme decided to take action into her own hands and start her own business, Considered Capital, where she runs the first alternative funding school. She shares weekly newsletters about alternative funding, and she runs regular workshops with socially focused businesses. Since then, Considered Capital has gone from strength to strength. As part of her sold-out alternative funding school, Esme has now worked with 120 founders, over 75% of whom are underrepresented, and her popular newsletter is now read by over 2,500 people every week. So it's no surprise that Esme has a growing number of awards to her name, having recently been recognised as one of the top 100 women in social enterprise by the Pioneers Post. But for all her success, perhaps what I find most refreshing about Esme's work is her unwavering focus on balancing profit and purpose. She says, "I've always wanted to run a business on a fair model and treat profit and purpose as equals." And I can certainly testify that she truly is someone who practices what she preaches when it comes to this. So Esme Verity, welcome to the Social Innovators Podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me. That was a very kind introduction.
Oh, it's so good to have you here. And I have to say, for the benefit of our listeners, Esme is dialing in from beautifully sunny Accra in Ghana. So I'm here in my three jumpers looking at you very enviously. So go on, tell us, what is it like in Accra today?
Well, I mean, I don't want to rub it in, but it is. It's a beautiful city in Ghana. We live by the sea, and we are very lucky to be able to call this place our home.
Very cool. Well, we're not feeling at all jealous in our, as you say, a million layers and chilly London breeze, but thank you for dialing in. It's really great to chat to you. And I mean, I mentioned in the introduction there, Alternative Funding School and Considered Capital, which of course you founded. So let's just start with some of the basics. It would be great if you could start off by telling our listeners, what do you mean by alternative funding?
Great question, and one that I get a lot, and I should really write a blog on this. What I hope alternative funding will mean in the future will just mean all types of funding for your starter or for your small business. But currently, what it sits as is all different types of funding that sit outside venture capital. So to explain that sort of jargon so that everyone understands what it means. So for lots of startups and small businesses, venture capital is, they often believe that is the primary way to fund your business. A venture capital is a type of funding. So businesses that you might be familiar with, so Uber, Facebook, Airbnb, they all have taken hundreds of millions of dollars in investment. Lots of different rounds of investment to be able to grow their businesses. But this type of funding really only suits that type of business, you know, probably a tech business. It has to be some form of high growth business that can scale very quickly and needs that kind of funding with the aim of being a unicorn business. That's a business with a valuation of $1 billion, like Uber, like Airbnb. If you don't fit into that world, it can be very difficult to understand how you might fund your business. But actually, there are other options out there. both in terms of funding, but also the type of business you're looking to build. If you want to build one that perhaps better balances profit and purpose, you want to explore those options. That's sort of what we try and support founders with.
Really interesting. Well, look, thank you for taking us through that. I mean, I realise that some of it starts to feel a little bit technical, but actually I think what you do as part of Considered Capital is help break down a lot of this jargon into really simple terms. So you have, of course, developed this alternative funding school. So for anybody that may be interested in what you're doing there, what sort of things will you cover as part of that academy or that training schedule?
Sure. So our alternative funding school is essentially a six-week cohort-based crash course in how to raise alternative funding. It's for people that are either at a very early stage in their business and they're trying to understand what's ahead of them. How might they fund their business? Is VC right? Is another route correct? How can you actually put some steps in place? As you say, funding is very overwhelming. How can you put a nice funding roadmap together so you can actually get on with the other arguably more fun bits about building a business, not just thinking about funding? And it's also for people who are, who I mentioned earlier, you know, possibly bootstrapped, maybe have got some grants, but need a really big chunk of money and are looking for sort of innovative financing to solve that problem and are actively shopping around for different ways to fund their businesses. That's who it's for. The aim of this course is to really inspire people to think beyond what they know about funding right now. Change their perception of what's possible. I think what's really unique about what we provide and is what I get as feedback again and again. We've now run five cohorts of this course, and it's all about the community that we bring you into. Sometimes it can feel very alienating to be saying something very different from everyone else. If everyone's saying VC money, you know, mainstream business, exit in 10 years, let's be a unicorn. If you are a business that has a social mission at the heart of what you're doing, you want impact, you want to balance your profit and purpose, it's very difficult to continue those thoughts when everyone is telling you otherwise. And in this, in our school, it's like, okay, you can breathe. You don't need to try and convince anybody in your space, in this space, of your sort of beliefs and feelings. You're like, okay, we can just skip that and we can get on to how do we build what I like to describe as wonky shaped businesses, which I am stealing that term from somebody who did our course in the summer, because I really like it. I think it defines exactly the type of businesses that we're supporting. If you feel like you're a little bit different, then this is the place for you.
Well, I want to pick up on that point about that being different. I think there feels something back to front that a company that is looking to combine a purpose and profit is somehow different, that it doesn't fit into the mainstream. That in itself feels very backwards, particularly within a narrative now of more social consciousness. I mean, this is quite a big question, but why do you think those quote-unquote wonky-shaped businesses, those businesses that may be less focused on fast growth, wanting to become unicorns, why do you think they are still treated as the exception?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it is a big question. I have my theories, as it were. I think one of them is that people still want to live in this sort of black and white world and fit things into boxes. You know, you're either fast growth, Airbnb, designing this rocket ship, which honestly, there's an extremely low chance you're ever going to be a unicorn, like extremely like 0.1% chance of you hitting that, selling your business and becoming a multimillionaire, multi-billionaire. But actually, it somehow just become almost increasingly the norm of what you can aspire to be. You have lost perspective a little bit. Or it's like, you're a charity and you're doing something good, and you will, people will give you like philanthropic money, grants, but it's a real struggle to keep charities going in a sustainable way if they're constantly looking for more funding to do the brilliant work that they do. And actually, we can't look at those in such a black and white manner. We have to think about, in this grey area, what are the possibilities inside here where you can build a good business that's profitable, large, but also has purpose and an impact. You don't have to sacrifice that to be a for-profit business. We have more and more of them now, and you know, it's just growing. When we get more examples, people will start being like, well, this is the future, because honestly, why would you build a business if it doesn't have some sort of impact here, really a positive impact? And we need more financing options that match the aspirations of our founders.
Yeah, I completely agree. It feels like, luckily, there is more and more focus on this. I know it still feels like the alternative funding world, as it's still currently called, is in the minority, but it also feels like in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a bit of a resurgence, that there's been kind of more and more momentum. So I want to hear a little bit more about your journey to deciding to take the plunge and founding Considered Capital in the first place, because I mean, we all know that setting up a business can be challenging, it can be very exciting, but it's not without the risks and the uncertainty attached. So what was it that made you think, finally, let's take this leap of faith, let's found Considered Capital?
I think it's interesting that you use the word finally, right? It definitely was that years of, you know, umming and ahhing between employment, and I had like a consultancy where I was providing marketing support for businesses, but then I went back into employment. I had another business. I've had maybe 5 or 6 businesses since I was about 12. But I think what finally hit me was like, I have no choice but to be self-employed. As in, I struggle with employment. It doesn't fit my personality. It doesn't fit the way I function, the way I want to work, full-time employment. And so I needed to create something else that would enable me to live the life that I wanted, which is, you know, I work remotely. My business is in the UK mainly, but I'm not based there. I wanted to be able to live anywhere, work my own hours, be very flexible, but, you know, build a business that had measurable impact on the world, but also generate money and wealth in a somewhat scalable manner. And like over sort of, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, I got to that conclusion and I was like, well, this is the only choice I have. And somebody said that to me. They were like, you'll know when you have to do this, because you'll just be like, I can't do anything else. Like, even if it's a niggling feeling, being like, oh, maybe I could get a job, I don't think you're quite there. You have to be like, this is my only option. I mean, I'm a person of extremes. I'm like, I'm in it or I'm not in it. So maybe it's just me, but I feel like it's not. So I just had to go for it. And then I think it's very freeing. And once you know that, you can figure out the other pieces. You know, saying that, you have to also acknowledge my privilege and where I was. You know, I had decent amount of savings. I don't have any children, any like dependents. I could spend a good chunk of a year not really making any money to build a business that I wanted, rather than needing to take in money in these. So I think it's always worth stating that and recognizing that, because not everyone is in the same position to be able to take that leap right now.
Totally. I think you're right. I think it's always important to acknowledge that. I think it's very interesting what you said there about your personality type, and that for you, it sort of felt like this was the only choice. And I mean, look, I don't think that applies to every entrepreneur or founder that it's necessarily that or nothing. But I also do think that for all the challenges, which is inevitable, the challenges of having your own business does have, there's got to be a pretty strong pull to go for it, because I think otherwise it could be quite challenging to sort of ride through the inevitable bumpy rides that happen at times and the sort of risk that is obviously associated with having your own business and so on. It's not for the faint-hearted, I think is fair to say, and I don't think it's for someone who's kind of half in, half out. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's become a bit of a danger in, you know, the lot of articles and pieces in the media being like, entrepreneurship will solve your problems. Like, who wants to work for the boss? Like, you know, you want flexibility and to be able to just like go to the beach every day, like all of this stuff. And I think entrepreneurship is for a very specific type of person. And I don't know, put on the pedestal, I feel like sometimes. And it's, I suppose it's a bit like venture capital, right? It's one option, not the best option for everybody. Entrepreneurship is not the best option for everybody. It's for a certain type of person. And when I say a certain type of person, it's not just for like a white man who wants to make loads of money. I think it's more a personality. So if you hear people being like, it's not for you because of your socioeconomic background or because of your race or because of your gender, remove yourself from that person. Get out of that space. It's more about your personality or goals in life.
I think you're spot on. I completely agree. And I do also agree, though, that there is a little bit of glorification at times, which probably skirts over the reality, which is ups and downs and everything in between. And it's so right for the right person, but it's also not sunshine and roses. And to be glorifying it, I think, is also unhealthy and probably unhelpful. But I think that's a really honest take of, you know, how you found yourself in this space, and a really interesting and probably very relatable journey for many people who have, as we've talked about, finally taken that leap. But I think this is a good segue at this point to move on to your top three learning. So the first one is, when it comes to businesses, you don't need to choose between profit and impact. And obviously we've talked about this a little bit already, but can you just start off by telling us, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned this a bit earlier, but it's again, this black and white world we live in where people feel like they need to make a choice. And I did also for a very long time. I really struggled to imagine what it might look like to build a for-profit business that manages to be, I suppose, a good business, you know, like, good to your employees, good to your other stakeholders, not extractive, has the impact that you want, like the service you provide actually has an impact. And I think it's really difficult to see how that's possible. We have so many just examples of large businesses. You know, I went to work at VC-backed businesses that did have impact at the core of what they were doing, and, you know, had good intentions and really wanted to serve their end user and do good. But it was a really difficult balance for them, because ultimately the goal was to make money for their investors. There's always going to be some kind of exit event. By exit event, I mean, you've got to sell your business. The people that give you money needs to get their money back. And it needs to be large. I was like, this doesn't quite fit with a lot of these businesses. Like, they want to have long-term impacts, or they want to make sure that their mission is like, and the impact they want to have is the sort of primary mission of this business. And it never felt like it quite was. And it's like, well, actually, when I came across the Zebras and I found other examples of incredible founders, build incredible businesses that made that decision, they were like, we're putting our purpose at the center of things. We're still making money. We're going to be a huge business that's making millions per year, but we're not doing it in an extractive manner. I think that was a huge learning for me, to realize that that is possible. It's not easy, but it's certainly possible if you know what you want. And that's what I always teach people in this course. It's like, you have to know what you want. Are you seeking unicorn status? Are you seeking something else? And to be really, really honest with yourself, right? At the beginning, there isn't a right or a wrong. But if you want this other world, you have to really know it. But it is definitely possible.
Very interesting. You have to know it. You have to be prepared to take a different path and have a different outcome. And that may be a more rewarding one, but it's a different choice and you have to be really intentional about it. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. The other thing I want to ask you about is impact, because you talk about this balance between profit and impact, but I also think impact has become one of those words that is floated around a lot. It can feel a little bit intangible and it can certainly be hard to measure and account for. So I guess first question is, what does impact mean to you in this context, and how can you make sure you really are having a positive impact is the second part of that question as well.
It is true. This is what's challenging in any space, right? You get a lot of jargon. People define it in different ways. And even I will fall into jargon and it'll become confusing. And impact is definitely one of those. I think to make it really, really simple, impact can mean very different things, but it needs to be in some way measurable. I think that's the really, really important thing. Otherwise, you can't track it. And I know that it's not always easy. There's no perfect way to measure anything. This is literally what my partner does every day. He tries to measure impacts. But you have to set some metrics up about the impact you'd like to create in your business. You don't need to share them. You don't need to talk about them. But you can track them and have a good idea of what you're trying to do. Now, the impact can look very different. You know, you've got impact businesses that are not necessarily a business that you would, you know, for example, a food and drinks business. It might not be obvious they are an impact business because they're just buying and selling food. But if you look inside that business, that is where the impact they're trying to have. They're trying to make sure that, you know, for example, their employees are well paid. Their employees actually are happy at work, which is difficult to achieve. And they put money into making sure that happens. Money that could be invested in the business. They're going to know we're going to give our employees £1,000 a year, you know, to have a nice time, right? Actually creating that culture. That is their impact. Or they could be looking at where the supply chain, where these food and drink items are coming from. Can they track that? And they look at the supply chain and make sure that bad things are not happening. Impact can look very different in all sorts of businesses, but focus on a few of them and make sure that they matter to you as a founder. And when you bring in some team members, you instill that right at the beginning. You enshrine it in your team culture. You enshrine it in your legal articles and everything that you do. Because I think one of the biggest issues that I see is when a founder leaves, the mission kind of crumbles. You can't just drive it from you. It has to be the business that has that mission. And that's why I think it's really important for it to be enshrined.
Really good advice. Again, all lots of really practical tips as well that people can really learn from. There are so many different parts to it, but I think what I like there in particular is that it doesn't have to be splashed everywhere that we are all about impact. It's almost the being at the very heart of every step, whether that's in terms of how you're looking after your staff, managing your supply chain, making sure everyone's being paid fairly in the process is as much part of your mission rather than only how you're promoting it. So we could chat about that probably for the whole podcast, but I do want to move on to your second learning, which is another gem. And it sort of touches on some of the things we've talked about a little bit earlier in the conversation, which is do the thing rather than talk about the thing. So what does that mean for you, Esme?
Yeah, I think this is something, again, that I've spent a long time grappling with myself. You know, I think I'm naturally the kind of person that could spend a lot of time thinking, pondering. I mean, I'm a practical person, but I, you know, could possibly get lost in that to the point where it's like 3 years later and we're still pondering the best solution to a thing. And I really had to stop myself and be like, how can I go from A to B in a really simple way and get some more learnings? And this is how I frame my life as experiments now. But experiments that are carefully designed. We're not just making random actions. We're going, all right, I want to launch this product, for example. In the best case scenario, I'd spend 6 months building the best thing ever. I'd invest 40K in it, build a wait list. It's going to be amazing. As we know, you build something, nobody comes. You spent all that money because you spent so long thinking, planning, getting advice, getting feedback. I'm not saying none of that is useful, but you can take smaller steps to get you to where you want to be that are actual steps, not just thoughts and ideas. So, you know, for our course, we ran the first pilot. We hadn't built the course before we advertised it. Because first we wanted to know, does anybody want this? We think this is a great idea. Does anyone else think this is a great idea? I did it with a friend of mine. We trusted each other. We actually met through his every night. And I was like, let's give it a go. And actually, it was a lot more popular than we realized. Then we were like, okay, fine, we'll invest small amount of money. We're not going to make the perfect course we could ever make because we're basing things off some assumptions. We're going to launch it. People are going to pay us. It was a very small amount. People paid us. We're going to run it. We're going to see what happens. We'll get our feedback, but we'll get it. We'll get useful feedback. Someone's actually used it and we haven't spent all our savings building this. That's what I mean, right? Run smaller, low-risk experiments as you go to get to where you want to be. Don't just spend ages planning, year and a half. I see all the time. I had a call someone the other day. They built an entire marketplace. It was huge. They spent 6 months building it and over £200,000. And they hadn't spoken to anybody about it.
Wow.
Don't just talk about it. Don't just spend ages planning. Do it. Do little jumps. Much, much more useful.
That's really interesting. And you've used this word perfect quite a few times. And I think that's something we've talked on the podcast before about this idea of perfectionism and that feeling of needing it to be right and maybe finding it difficult to do something which you might perceive to be quote unquote kind of half baked. How has that process been for you? Have you been comfortable with this idea of almost letting go of that perfectionism and being like, right, well, it's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be, as you call it, an experiment, or I'm going to learn something from this and it's going to be good enough to be able to get me to the next stage. Is that something that's come naturally, or have you had to sort of fight against those instincts of being like, it's not good enough, or whatever else you may tell yourself at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to make generalizations, but I do think as women, we are conditioned to appear perfect, to only do things when they are perfect. We're conditioned as children not to play, not to hurt ourselves, sit there and be perfect, sound perfect, and everything will be great and you'll be liked. And actually, this is not how the world works. We don't need to do that. I think it's, you know, unfortunately a massive disadvantage when it comes to building businesses. There are a lot of advantages for men, but one of them is certainly the fact that they just go for it. And I'm not saying we need all of that energy, because sometimes it's just like you're going for it in a chaotic manner, but we need a smidgen of that energy and that approach to get us past this perfectionism. And that's why I like this experiment framework. So I think it makes it easier. It's like, you know, okay, it's not perfect, but how will I measure this experiment? How will I know if this pilot's gone well and I should do another one, perhaps charge more this time, put a bit more time into the videos, into the content, and grow from there? But it's kind of difficult. And I think we're all on a different journey and we're all trying to unlearn the things in our path. And I think that's a, if you focus on anything, it's a really important one. If you think that's something that's holding you back, then there are some very practical ways that you can try and force yourself to move forwards. Or one framing that I found really helpful that I read years ago, they were just like, most things that you try and do that are scary, that you think you need to be perfect, they're reversible. Most of our decisions are reversible. Very few, if you do a thing, it is irreversible. Like, even if you start a business and, you know, you start as a limited company but actually decide you want to convert to a CIC or a charity or something else, it is possible. Almost everything is reversible. And that framing I found really helpful. And that's how I try and make my decisions. Now it's like, if I do this thing, I take the small step, can I go back if it doesn't work? What's the worst thing that's going to happen? You think people are going to laugh at you? Honestly, nobody cares. People are too busy thinking about their own lives and how what they're doing is not perfect. If our experiment hadn't gone well, we would have just stopped or pivoted or offered something else. And I, you know, would have saved tens of thousands of pounds in the meantime.
Yeah, I really like that framing, that idea of, in this scenario, what's the worst thing that can happen here? And is that worst thing something I could deal with? And if the answer is yes, then chances are that is a step that you are okay in taking. The other thing I would like to ask is about when things don't go to plan. So, you know, I like your framing of experiments. That's really refreshing. The nature is, of course, with experiments, some of the experiments give you the results that you're looking for. You might get a lovely sort of data set. I'm thinking now about chemistry experiments, which is not probably a very helpful analogy, but sometimes your experiments actually don't go quite to plan. You've got sort of smoke in your face and it's just not really gone as you expected. How do you deal with those sorts of situations? Is that a situation you would feel reasonably comfortable about? Or has that been in itself also something you've had to adapt and adjust to?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all struggling with that. So we're pretending that we are okay with failure when we're not. You know, it just sort of depends on the type of failure. If it's a particularly public failure and you feel like embarrassed by it, it can be really difficult. But again, that's why I would go back to this experiment, right? Because you just go like, well, I launched something, I expected to get 20 signups, I actually got none. Okay, why? What is this telling me? Don't make it personal. You know, particularly early on, things become very personal. It's like if a business fails, it's a personal failure. It's particularly like me, I'm the face of my business. But you're like, well, actually, let's think about it and go, well, maybe actually I didn't send enough emails for this launch. I didn't have enough people on my list to begin with. They're all interesting, useful data points for you then to go, what would my experiment look like next time? And to take things less personally. I think that's what I found really helpful and go, it's not a perfect failure. I'm not just an idiot. I learned something. And next time, I will do this differently. I won't do this in the future because it's not useful and not the way I want to go. But yeah, it's massively challenging. I think, you know, as we get older, I hate to say as we get older, but there is some peace to be found as you get a bit older in terms of being a bit more okay with failure, a bit more okay with things not going right and not being perfect, because you've got more experience and you realize that actually nobody really cares. Nobody really cares. And even if they do, you can't control how people think.
Great advice, really practical advice. All these gems coming out, and totally agree that the more that they can be viewed as data points, a sort of data gathering exercise, rather than feeling like your kind of personal worth or your personal value is somehow etched to that, the better. Because easier said than done, again, realize. But I also think that is at probably at the heart of being okay, and maybe even viewing it as something positive, that you're learning something from it. And that is a good thing, I suppose, isn't it? I think that's actually a very nice segue to your third learning, which is it's okay to be scared. It means you really like what you're doing, and that's a good thing. So what does that mean to you, Esme?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is very linked to the second point, or the point that we were talking about in terms of perfectionism, right? I think in this way, something that I've thought about a lot is like, why I'm scared. Am I scared because I'm trying to make something perfect? Or actually, am I scared for another reason? And sometimes you're scared because you really care about the thing that you do. And you've wrapped that fear up in other things. You made other excuses. But actually, it's like, for me, I just really care about not the success of this business. I really care about the impact I'm trying to create in this business. And I think that if I make an error, or I make a mistake, or I don't think big enough, or I don't sort of make an interaction or do this thing, then the impact I want to have won't happen. Actually, I think that is a good and healthy driving force, because I think that if I'm not scared, then I've started to not care. And that's not good, because then you've got no North Star. So I want to be scared about the things that I'm doing, because I hope that that means that I still care. And it hopes that, I mean, the impact I want to have is going to be big. I'm making big decisions and big leaps that maybe 4 or 5 years ago I wouldn't have done, because I was too scared and I hadn't worked out what the fear was. I just thought I was embarrassed. I wasn't good enough. I was waiting for something. But actually, I was scared because I really, really just wanted to happen, and I was scared that it would go wrong. And it can be healthy, I think, if it's channeled right.
Really interesting. And thank you for sharing that. I mean, I think it's, first of all, understanding why you might feel like that is sort of the first step in a way. And then, as you say, trying to channel that in as positive a way as you can is also a really healthy step. So, I mean, have you got any more specific situations that you can think of on your journey with Consider Capital that you remember feeling particularly scared, whether that's in relation to generating funding or any particular launches or anything on your journey?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose launching thing in the first place, or at least turning something from a project with a friend to a business that had a brand, had a concept that would require me to invest some money up front to make it happen, you know, doing it without this person that I started doing it with. I also coincidentally moved country at the same time. And yeah, I thought I was scared because I was like, I'm investing this money. I'm scared because numerous other things. But when I really sat with myself, gave me some quiet time, I was like, I'm scared because I really, really think this can be useful. I really, really think this should exist in the world. I really think that I can help people build their businesses and create the businesses that we need for the future and for us to survive. I'm scared that that won't happen. And when you feel like that, you're like, well, actually, even if I just do something, we're moving in the right direction. It doesn't matter how I get there now. As long as, you know, I mean, it matters how I get there. You know, we're not doing bad things, but like the direction of it, the output doesn't necessarily matter, as long as the impact that I want to have is happening. But everyone has their own driving forces, right? And I think is a huge advantage. Again, I know that I'm generalizing, but I think women often, we spend a lot more time thinking, I think. We're a bit more You know, we allow ourselves to think a bit more internally about ourselves, about who we are and what we're doing in the world. And I think I find a lot of women are a lot more aware, have a lot more self-awareness. And that can be a huge advantage in building a business, because you really know a lot more about yourself, and it can help you build resilience as you build your business. Now I'm really, you know, now I'm really aware of this, what's driving me. And every time I have a, oh, this is scary, or oh God, am I going too big here? Oh, should I really be interacting with that person? Is that what that fear is? Because I just want it to happen, so we're going to seem to make it happen now. And if it doesn't work, it just doesn't work.
Really helpful. And again, I think some practical tips for some people who, may be feeling in that situation. And look, I could go on and on, but that actually feels like a really great note to wrap this up. I think before we do, though, I would love to see if you've got a final piece of practical advice. I feel like this episode has been littered with practical advice, Esme, but have you got one final piece of practical advice, either something that you've already talked about or something slightly different, to leave our listeners with today?
I would say be really careful about the advice you get from people. I get calls from people being like, I just shared my idea at this dinner party and someone's just gone, oh, that's never going to work. And you go, well, who is that person? Where do they come from? What's their background? Is that actually what they're saying valid? It's really, really hard, I know, too, because you're always getting loads of advice. It's really difficult to assess what's useful to you, what's not useful. But one way to do that is to really think about who that person is, where they come from, what their perspective might be. You know, this man actually just had no idea about this particular market, had no idea about the product, and thought it could work. Well, that advice isn't useful because it's not informed by anything but their just personal experience. So I would say really challenge those things, and by challenging them, you'll end up creating that community of people that are right for you. You don't want echo chamber, you don't want yes people, but you want people that get you and will support you to thrive and prosper.
That's great. That is great advice. I know your advice down now, Esme, but that was a gem to finish on. Thank you. It's been great to chat to you. Thank you so much for sharing your story, your experiences, and all of that advice. I know people will have got a lot from that, and I certainly did too. So thanks very much for chatting with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Social Innovators Podcast with me, your host, Naomi Whitborn. If you enjoyed what you heard today, I would be so grateful if you could give us a rating, write a quick review, and subscribe to this podcast. You can also follow us on social media, and please do drop us an email if you've got any feedback or recommendations. All of these details can be found in the show notes. Thank you again for listening. We will be back with more soon.